Hello, everybody. This is Nellie Bly, and welcome to my podcast. Originally released in 1887, while I was doing some groundbreaking investigative journalism, going undercover as a patient in an insane asylum in order to expose abuses. Actually, no, I'm not, but that is very fascinating. I went to a site about obscure people in history, and that was Nellie Bly. She also went around the world in 72 days, beating the fictional novel version of doing the same thing in 80 days. Interesting. If you want to learn more about Nellie Bly, go to Google and search it up. If you want to learn more about how to become a patron for Jughead's Basement, go to www.jugheadsbasementpodcast.com. Press that little button that says Patreon. It'll whiz you to another place where you can press that button for the $2, $5, or $10 tiers. Tears like not down your face, but tears like as in money in your pocket. Give that to me, and I will give you swag or shit in the mail. And you will also get unedited versions of all these interviews brought to you via video before the at-home and on-the-road audience gets the audio podcast. There you go. That's for you. That's for you and Nellie Bly. If you can't afford to do that, I understand. We all aren't made out of money. So I would appreciate you helping to keep this podcast free by making it a larger thing so I can continue doing it and garnering other Patreons. You can do this by sharing some of your favorite episodes or writing reviews at iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts. You can also give it 4 or 5 stars, but it would be really nice if you can actually spend a little bit of time to do a review. Let us here know what you think, and I will also spread that through the internet. So when you look up Nellie Bly, you may also find a reference to your review of Jughead's Basement podcast. The web is that confusing. That could possibly happen. This was a great conversation with a man that I had never met before, Sammy King. I've been doing some deeper diving into reading articles and listening to audiobooks on journalism in general, and I'm taking this very seriously and trying to get unique stuff out of every guest. I hope I did that with Sammy King. It was wonderful talking to him and getting to know his brain a little bit. So let's step out of that undercover insane asylum patient being and get into this podcast. Listening to The Process by the band Get Dead, released by Fat Records on the record Bad News, which came out in 2013. Hello, everybody, and welcome to Jughead's Basement, subcategory Lo-Fi Interviews with Hi-Fi Guests, episode 111, with Sammy King from Get Dead. This week, Sammy and I talk about such things as real recognize real, genre hopping in the modern age, punks becoming industries, latchkey kids, living in the gray and being a member of society, use of drugs and the ego, plus much, much more Dead Get More. Where do I go when the whiskey's gone?
Yes, 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 yes.
Test, 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 test. This is I've been informed by Vanessa that this is
Mike's little setup, probably?
No, this is actually me and Chesky, our new group. No, don't do that. Thanks. That sucks.
We don't need distortion right now.
Yeah, we don't need distortion. No, our new project, the Co-Defendants, is here. And so we've made this back office at Mike's house like a Studio B.
Yeah.
They're very fucking, she's very like ADD with all this shit. So we'll be like trying to write something and it'll come in and be like, I gotta fucking work on the fucking musical. And we'll be like, fuck. And we just like found ourselves with nowhere to fucking go. So we're just like, well, fuck it. Like we come from like a like hip hop background where we just make these weird little labs.
Yeah.
We just make our own little fucking Studio B office back here. So
well,
we
got, it like, looks
and it looks legit, right?
It looks very pleasant in the nice little, it's sunny, sunny day out there in the background.
Oh yeah. You know, just Hollywood, California. It's some weird mansion, you know.
We're under about 2 or 3 feet of snow right now in Chicago.
Ooh, so. Sucker born every day.
Hello, Sammy.
Hello.
Nice to meet you virtually.
Virtually. Nice to meet you too. Thank you for having me.
Yeah. Hey, I just watched this was a quick turnaround for me from Vanessa, so I tried to inhale as much of you as I could handle.
Okay.
And, I just watched the Get Dead at Fat Mike's backyard, and I was actually impressed how you sounded like the record.
Oh, rad. Thank you very much.
It is a compliment, but it also led to one of these things I was thinking about you, and one of the things that I feel is going to sit over this conversation is my obsession with rawness, but also a band trying to get better and perfect themselves and how to maintain that rawness, but also get better as a band.
I mean, that's the age old question. Like, you know, people fuck up on their like sophomore releases.
Yeah.
It's not like a curse. It's just like, as a band, like you're the sophomore version of most bands is fucking lame. Bands are either going to like do what you said. You're either going to like progress and try to become a better band without it feeling like contrived, or you're trying to, you know, become a better band for any other reason than making better music is just like actual fans or real, you know, it's like the hip hop shit, real, recognize real. Like people can just inherently tell when you're fucking, you know, forcing something or doing something like that. I'm a big supporter in the idea that if you're in a band and you're starting to, it's almost like a, you know, a relationship, you know, when you start seeing the shit fucking pulling apart and fading away, and you have a gut feeling about like, you know, you're not really that stoked on what you're doing, you should just stop. You should be stoked on, you know, it's like breaking up with somebody, you know, you can look at it like you're fucking, you know, it's this horrible tragedy and now you got this void in your life and fucking blah, blah, blah. Or you can look at it as like, yo, you learned all you could from that person and you got to move on. People should look at like their bands like that. You know, luckily for us, we still are psyched on like meeting up on band practice nights and getting 12 packs and like somebody brings some mushrooms or something. And like, we just like hang out as friends and fucking try to write shit. Cause we all listen to every genre of music and we're all kind of like music nerds in our own head. I think that when we're making Dancing with a Curse, we're very aware of how lame genre melding can be when people try to like put like hip hop with fucking punk rock or stuff like that. So paying attention to fucking, if you're going to do a genre or something and you need to learn it and do it very well, there's a whole fucking section of that music that people do for a living and they're going to listen.
It's funny. I was doing a podcast the other day where we talked a little bit about, Hallie from the Unlovables was talking about how it seemed like in the 90s, there was a lot of pressure from punk bands to not listen to other genres, that it was very, it got a little bit tunnel vision. At the time. So I'm wondering whether this reaction, and I believe it too. I mean, punk rock is one of the many, many different genres I've always listened to. And I've always made that known, like all through my time interviews within the punk band, I would admit to liking Jethro Tull and
You
know, bands like that, or Black Sabbath. But do you think this acknowledgement of punk having those blinders on may in a weird way help you to make sure you're doing the other genres right?
I think maybe it'll make you like more hyper aware. I came from I was born in 81. So when I was a teenager, the 90s hit and I was a skater. And so I'm from that, you know, that ilk of, we listened to skate videos. I used to take RCA chords and like off the VCR and, you know, fucking stick toilet paper in my mom's Stevie Nicks tapes on the top, because if you clog those holes, you can record.
Yeah, you can record all of them. Yeah.
And so, and there would be like, the sounds of the skateboarding in the background to like Unwritten Law or like Tribe Called Quest. But what I'm getting at is that like my generation maybe was the first ones to do it, where music didn't really necessarily make who you were. Like, you know, back in the day, there were stoners.
Yeah.
There were metalheads. You had your fucking Hick Hill.
Yeah, just walk into a high school cafeteria and look around and you see that.
Exactly. I mean, and like as a skater, that was tight, because I mean it was bad because people throw bottles and shit at you and fucking do a kickflip, fucker. But as like an identity thing, when you saw another person in an independent shirt or a Spitfire shirt at school, you know, or even like around your town, you'd be like, oh, there they are right there. There's my people, you know, and you'd automatically be friends because you've gone through the same shit. But skaters, I think, started doing it. But now today, I mean, it's really hard to even justify making full albums anymore, because everybody is on some genre shit where it's like a shuffle fucking society that we're in. On the way over here, I listened to St. John. I listened to fucking Animal Zoo and like, you know, fucking Parquet Courts. And that's just because my YouTube fucking whatever, you know, I use for
your randomizer or whatever. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. It's just
algorithm.
It plays everything, but I'm fucking bugging out to all of it. I'm like, this fucking song's sick, you know? So it's for me, I've never really had the blinders on for it, but I can also see that we're working with Fat Mike right now in Codefendants. He's like an active role in the band. He's not just producing it. He's going to be like singing and playing.
Hello, this is John in the future past. I was doing a little studying online, and I think what Sammy King is referencing, he is working on a project with Fat Mike that I've seen doing my Google search. He revealed on a podcast called Tuna on Toast with Stryker that he is working on a project called Codefendants with the great rapper DOC. That's the information I have on this right now. Back to Sammy.
The way that we go about making a lot of these tracks is based around how you would make a hip hop track, where it's like somebody would make the beat and then they would fucking, you know, tweak on the beat, and then they give you a full piece of music to just like spit over and then it's done. But with somebody that's never listened to hip hop at all, like his only fucking reference to hip hop is like on some dad shit, where you're just like, fool, don't ever say that in public again, you know? But yeah, it's interesting to watch somebody from the outside that doesn't have any kind of like, you know, frame of reference, try to be like, oh, like, you know, he's like, oh, whoa, that's like musicality in hip hop. It's like, they need to like, just like be more melodic when they spit raps. And it's like, there's a whole genres full of melodic rap spitters. Like
I was made aware of that with back in the 90s with Ghost Dog, the movie. I reference that movie a lot because it was my one and almost only relation with hip-hop that I really just dug it, and I felt like I kind of understood what they were doing. Like, they were taking the rap, which was a little less musical but rhythmical, and then they added a little bit more like melody in. Like,
yeah, for sure, 100%. There's a whole like slew of people I could like reference that have been doing this shit since the fucking early 90s, if not before. But like, Y from Anticon is like Anticon is a Bay Area hip hop, you know, collective or whatever that were underground in there. But I mean, all of his albums have been like him basically rapping, but like singing, like if he was in like early Modest Mouse or something like that. There's so much fucking dope shit in so many subgenres. It's like, I think it's dumb to keep blinders on, and it's dumb to like have a one track purist mind. You know, I also think it's fucking lame if you're trying to like mix, say, like hip hop with punk rock in such a way of like, you know, I know they get a lot of shit and I'm sure they're fucking great guys, whatever. I don't give a fuck. But like, you know, like Limp Bizkit shit, or like that fucking, the new fucking like Travis Barker shit with like Machine Gun Kelly, where it's like this throwback fucking Taking Back Sunday pop fucking crap. And it's just like, everybody's watching it being like, this is fucking lame. What's happening here? Like, why is this being pushed and why is this being supported?
Yeah. I'm not one that tries to go off on corporate machine, but there is something just inherent in the idea of a a big machine trying to relate to a larger public, they always have to water down little elements of it to make it a little bit more palpable for.
Yeah. I mean,
they feel that. I mean,
yeah, they feel it. And like also when you, I mean, I just moved down to LA from the Bay Area because I'm going to be doing, be co-hosting this podcast with Fat Mike called Fat Mike's Fat Mike. And, you know, it just makes sense to be down here. But when you come down here and like just hanging around these motherfuckers that like know some people, you know, that are like doing some like industry shit down here, I guess, quote unquote, but it's not like this. It's not, I don't know. It's not a conglomerate of fucking like old fucking rich dudes in a fucking, you know what I mean? In an office trying to come up with new ways to make stupid music to make money off of it. But it's the actual people making the music. And the main problem is all the yes men around them. Like somebody has one idea down here and you get 14 people that are just fucking hanging around that are just like, yeah, that's the greatest fucking idea. Blah, blah. And then they push it through, you know, and then you get like, I guarantee that's what happened with this like resurgence of, you know, fucking these rappers that are just like basically starting emo bands now over pop music and stuff. It's just, I don't know, man. It's just, they're doing it wrong.
What do you think? I don't know. Reach back in the way back machine. And what do you think in your youth? I don't know. At least I do in my life. I have markers where even if they're partly fictional, but they are things that sort of changed my path or changed my thinking about something. When do you think you triggered this search for a genuineness or a raw, like, once again, I'm trying to get to, you love all these genres, but you chose punk. Was there something in that that gave you this sort of genuine feel of realness?
I mean, it probably happened when I was young. Like the first thing I stole when I was a kid, like 8 or 9 or something like that, was CDs from the public library. And I just randomly, you know, I was just trying to boost, trying to boost shit. I didn't even know if we had a CD player. It wasn't until like a year later when I listened to it, but it was X's Los Angeles. Mm-hmm. CD. And so it was like, I think that had an early impression on me from listening to that, because then I started kind of looking for that sound. So I got into like Iggy Pop and like going through my mom's shitty fucking Reba McEntire records. I found like a Thin Lizzy record. Yeah. And there was always something about like Thin Lizzy that was like very, they never really talked about it, but it just felt like they were like romanticizing like blue collar working fucking normal ass fools at a bar, just starting shit, you know?
Yeah.
So I gravitated toward that shit and just being a street skater. You know, I listen to like Mobb Deep and fucking E-40, and like, you know, a lot of different like Bay Area, like gangster rap shit, just because that's what we grew up listening to. And that was always raw. And it's just like, I don't know. I just gravitate towards, I don't like any fucking band. And this goes out to everybody. Heard it here first. Fuck you. If you're a singer for a fucking punk rock band and you don't, you're not sweating by the end of the first song. Because that's, you know what I'm saying? Like it's,
yeah, I don't even know how not to sweat on stage. So.
Exactly. You know, I've seen it. I'm not going to name names and shit, but it's like the people that I have seen fucking do it. Yeah. There's people there to see you and shit, but you can look at the crowd and no one's going ape shit because nobody's like connecting to it on a real level. Cause you're not even sweating because you don't believe what you're saying. And if you don't believe what the fuck you're saying, how am I supposed to believe what you're saying? And so now you're just up there as like a fiction writer. And I didn't come here to see a play, you know? So
I feel like you're talking a little bit about what some people mistake for like selling out. Whereas I talk about more the internal process of integrity, which is you have to be honest to yourself and pursue the things that you're doing. And selling out is actually going against what you believe, not, you know, becoming popular, but actually just going against what you believe is real to you. Does that make any sense?
You know, no, it does. And it brings up an interesting thing we were talking about the other day is, I mean, as far as like Get Dead goes, we've positioned ourselves not to be a crazy political band or a band that's putting this emphasis on, you know, fucking hopping in fucking train cars and shit. Like we've just been a fucking band that talks about like real like life shit. When the selling out thing comes up, it's hard because you have like, I mean, I don't think we could sell it. I mean, unless we fucking started like wearing suits and like, you know, having cheesy dance moves or stuff. But I think we already have cheesy dance moves. but we don't give a fuck. So it's like, you know, you can't, it doesn't work. But what people need to remember too, is that I'm 40 years old right now and I'm in the fucking, the apex of something that I put into motion when I was a teenager.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know what I mean? This has all been like a pursuit of a teenage dream. And it's like, I don't even necessarily really want what the fuck I wanted when I was a teenager. But I think that it's like a stubborn thing where you've got to see it through. You know what I mean? It's like not looking at the directions of something. You're like, nah, fuck it. I'm going to John Wayne this. And I'll just get it done. And I think that's why we've gotten to where we're going, because a kid asked us once at a show, he said, you know, my dad said I shouldn't start a band. There's too many bands out there. It's like a waste of time. I'm like, yeah, well, there's a million bands today that just started. Come to second band practice, there's only going to be 500,000. And then by the fucking, by a month, you know what I mean? That 500,000 is going to be down to 100,000. Now put that timeline on a fucking a year, 2 years, you know, and you're down to fucking in the hundreds.
Mm-hmm.
And then 5 years, fuck, now the pool of motherfuckers that you're going against is only like 25, and those are pretty good odds, you know.
Yeah, like I was talking about this because at Columbia College, where I went to school for theater, there's you can see the people that are, if they don't make it immediately, they're just gonna not do it, pursue it anymore. There's like there's some instinct in some people that it's not worth it if I can't make it big, like within a few years or so. And then
and making it big is like different to everybody. Like for me right now, it's like I've been doing fucking music for, you know, well over 20 years in some facet or not. It's like, I just fucking quit my job like 3 months ago as a house painter that I've been doing for 12 years.
Wow.
Like my version of making it is just fucking making a fucking normal living. Like I don't have the thing in me that needs me to buy a new car or like new, I mean, I buy fuck, you know, it's like, I want my fits to be fucking tight, you know, but I mean, I can go to Target and fucking and rock a fit for fucking $30, and like, or I could go to the skate shop, get the same fucking fit for fucking $130. Like I try to be semi thrifty. If we're on tour and shit, I'll stay at the Hilton before the fucking Motel 6. We got the money. I don't know. Oh, that's it. It's like me for making it. It's like, I've made it because all I've ever wanted is just have like a zip zap card, like an ATM card that just works. I need to be able to get smokes. I need to be able to fucking pay my rent, my phone bill, and fucking get on an airplane from time to time. And then as long as I got some fucking bean and cheese rice burrito money and maybe a 40 here and there, I'm fucking, I feel like I've made it. Like there's not much else. I don't need to own property and I don't need to own a fucking crazy Tesla, and, you know, but that's me. Some people start this shit and, you know, I've seen motherfuckers like get the band name and the band logo and the merchandise together before they even had fucking their first band practice.
I was talking earlier about there was a period around, I don't remember when it was, but it wasn't when Green Day signed, and you just saw the difference in the scene. All of a sudden you had all these young kids that were actually touring in big vans with their parents.
Money.
Yeah. And it became like the all these people, like a whole family effort, pouring money into this adventure. And like I said, a lot of them just disappeared because you can't maintain that. And a lot of them
came from, I mean, there's always going to be exceptions to the rule and shit. But I feel that, you know, and it's not a knock on motherfuckers that came from a lot of money. You know, it's just, it's the, you know, my observation, the reality of it is that most of the best art that's ever been made has come out of one way or another, some sort of fucking suffering, yeah. Some kind of fucking, you know, growing up fucked up or fucking drug addiction or broken heart, or every great song or every great thing is like based around some sort of fucking tragedy. And when it's the same thing, it's like, you're not sweating by the end of the first song. A lot of the time people that come from a privileged upbringing where, you know, they had all this shit and they could ask mom and dad for the fucking Sprinter van and the fucking booking agent right off the bat. And their music is fucking 99% of the time garbage. Because what are you fucking singing about? It's like what I get scared about, like with Get Dead, Dancing with the Curse. Thank God it fucking popped off like it did. But now it's like, you know, we're not fucking having to play Fargo on Tuesday night, and we're not having to fucking like inch our way to the next town and show up a little hungry and a little more desperate and a little, you know, nobody wants to hear the fucking album about you being on a tour bus. That's for sure. You know what I'm saying? Like, yeah, I mean, we would never get a tour bus because the fucking, if you're a band out there listening and you need main support band, we'll definitely hop on your, but we would never, you know, we wouldn't
contact that
but you know, like we just, I mean, it would be tight, maybe do it like once or something, but it's just such a waste of fucking money. And like, you know, we got our bass player is a fucking high school English teacher. He's got a fucking daughter.
Yeah.
Like 7 years old, you know, or whatever. I fucking, if I got your age wrong, Frankie, I'm sorry. Your Uncle Sam loves you. but, you know, and then like our drummer has a kid and just like Mikey has his own business. It's like for us to go out on the road now and go do it, it's like a lot of moving parts and a lot of shit has to fucking be worked out. Baby's mamas have to be contacted and see if they're cool to watch them on their day that they're not supposed to watch. And I don't know if you've ever dealt with that, but they are never cool with that. So like, you know, shit like that.
Well, so I was talking the other day about how a lot of artists, especially punk artists, have to learn to be their own businessmen. Unlike a lot of like mainstream music, you know, where everyone takes over everything. There's something in the punk that wants to have their fingers in everything. And then they end up learning how to schedule their life, or they don't.
Or they don't. No, it's what I'm like.
And they burn bridges left and right if they don't.
Oh yeah. And like, I mean, I just got divorced last year and like, she fucking dealt with anything. She did finance for like companies. So she dealt with all the bills and all this stuff. And I'm like, I kind of lied to myself when we split that I was going to be able to like, I got this shit. And how hard is this? And I'm like, yeah, I'm fucking haven't paid bills for like fucking 10 years. All of a sudden, like, I'm like, my like mail starts like showing up with like the red lines across it.
Mm.
Like, what's all this fucking red line shit? Who's sending me? Are these coupons? It's like, your water bill's off, sir. Turning your shit off. So yeah, it's hard. And I think that the punk rock comes up because a lot of it is punk rock comes from like mainly like disenfranchised youth and like kids that grew up with single parents and they kind of had to like figure their shit out on their own. And they've got a thing in them where it's like, yo, fuck that. I can just, you know, I can just build that ramp or I can, you know, I can do it myself. I can figure it out myself because I'm self fucking reliant. And then you become into this industry and you have to start dealing with fucking schedules and, you know, taxes and shit like that. And you think you want to, I mean, I'm fucking so guilty of this being like, I got this shit. I don't even fucking pay some motherfucker fucking 10% of nothing for fucking to organize my shit. I'm an adult.
Yeah.
It turns out, nah, not so much, bro. I'm more on the creative side of things for sure.
Yeah, being a partial theater historian, there's Samuel Beckett who did Waiting for Godot, but he was obsessed with being in control of all of his work. And you could see that his work became less frequent over the years because he had to do all the translations, did all the business work. So all his day was caught up in business instead of creating. Which I think is a difficult position for especially a punk musician to be in, because I think it is important to be a part of that. It comes out in the music.
I think that for, you know, up and coming bands or even bands that are dealing with this shit, I think it's beneficial for somebody to at least, you know, if you're going to hire someone to, you know, do the taxes and manage the books and like pay your bill, do that, at least go through the fucking, you know, the spreadsheet or whatever it is that manager has to do. So you understand what they're doing. So if something ever comes up, you can at least have your foot in the door to try to like step in and be like, well, I can kind of see it, you know?
Yeah.
It also helps with fucking just for empathy reasons. Like if your manager is fucking stressed out and you've never had to do end of the year, fucking putting receipts together and finding all these emails and doing all that, you know, and then you're like, you know, start fucking getting down on them because they're like lagging or they're fucking shit up. You know, if you've done it before, you're probably not going to do that because you're gonna be like, nah, he's doing a shitty fucking job. Same with like cops. I think that like, if you're fuck the police for one, but if you're going to do that, you should have to A, live in the neighborhood that you're policing. And then that way you're going to be more liable if your kids are going to school with their kids. If somebody's just like 0.3 over something, you're not going to give them a DUI, which is going to fucking wreck them for a year. If you're going to be able to like have a sense of community, if you made cops just do jujitsu once a week and fucking release some of this aggression they got, because it's got to be frustrating. All you're doing is showing up to the worst parts of society all fucking day. Everyone's lying to you. Nobody fucking likes you. And I mean, that they did that shit to themselves. I mean, I don't fucking feel bad for them. I'm just like trying to like explain that, like, if more humans took the time, the same amount of the time they used to bitch about things and spent that time to actually go do those things to get a different perspective on it, I think it would be a better place with an easy fix like that. Even if it's just for a fucking hour, just go put yourself in someone's shoes. You know what I mean?
Yeah. One of my best friends is a cop, and we call him a Punk Rock Bill. He's been like a huge Ramones fan and followed Weasel all around. And he's a cool guy. He always gets frustrated with the people that cops that hide behind the billboards and wait for the speed tickets. And
yeah, well, cops, I mean, cops hate, like city cops hate fucking CHP officers.
Yeah, they're just like,
yo, they're like rent-a-cops to them. You know what I mean? They're just like motherfuckers, because they get them too. And it's like, we, you know, Derek was with Aaron that owns Fat Records, and he was a cop, you know, and he was a fucking great guy. Cool fucking dude, always fucking funny, fucking, you know, blind eye to some shit if he was out of the state and walked in, you know. But like, I can't reconcile the same way with a, like, somebody choosing that life to be into law enforcement just because of the inherent bullshit that comes with it, is the same way that I couldn't, you know, justify me being friends with, like, if my best friend was, you know, his really good friend is a pedophile, you know, it's like, by proxy, my best friend is subscribing to pedophilia because he's supporting this person, whether emotionally or fucking whatever, you know what I'm saying? So it's like, that's with cops. It's like, I fucking, my heart goes out to the good ones, bad apple in every group, all that fucking jazz, Hallmark card here, but you're choosing to fucking be a part of a system that is inherently fucking shitty to its populace. And this is coming from somebody who's dealt with the fucking police on, like, my fucking mother went to prison. I've been to jail a bunch of times. I have a bunch of friends that are fucking have gone to prison. You know, co-defendants. Chesky just got out of prison a few years back. Like, the stories that you get from a lot of people are like, oh, I didn't do it. It's like, jail sucks because it's loud with dumb people that get caught. So that's why that place sucks. Fuck people in jail too. You hear the over time and time again, dumbass shit. Like, a fucking single mom that's working fucking 2-3 jobs because her fucking, she had to split from her fucking alcoholic fucking abusive husband, whatever, the baby dad, out of the picture. Now she got fucking 3 kids that she's got to get to fucking, you know, 2 different sporting events, school, back, food, fucking, and work these fucking 3 jobs. So she doesn't have time to go to the DMV because she lost her fucking ID to get her registration for her car. So she gets pulled over. They get her fucking a ticket for no registration. They impound her car. She can't make it to work. Can't make it to fucking court. So now you got a bench warrant. And then they take your ass into fucking jail for the bench warrant because you can't fucking pay for it. And now there's nobody to take the kids. So the kids go into foster care. And the foster care kids grow up and they get fucked up. And they end up in the fucking system with more fucked up kids. And that's just all because some fucking cop couldn't just fucking listen to a fucking a lady's story for 5 fucking minutes because they've, you know, and once again, sympathetic to it. They got to hear fucking dumbass stories every day, every time they talk to someone. But my problem is, like, you, if you subscribe to becoming a cop, you're fucking co-signing all the bullshit that goes with it. And I just can't be a part of it. You know, it's just fucking, it might be like a, you know, a regional thing, or maybe it was like bred into me or something. You know what I mean? But it's just, I'm a very analytical person, and my brain works as far as like looking at steps and stuff like that, and like how things happen, like cause and effect and critical thinking and all that. And there's nothing in my head that, like, I can, you know, justify people doing the police force. I mean, there's nothing you can do about it. It's all fucking chaos. If it's not there, it's like, you know, religion to me is just, you know, I think it's a necessary evil. If you gave fucking, you know, 2-3 billion people something not to believe in, think about how fucking crazy this place would be if they didn't think there's an imaginary dude in the sky judging them. Like, thank God, you know. But
literally,
is, man. God, so I go off on a rant on it.
That's fine. Like, you did. I let you go on that rant, but I'm not going to let you do it again. So
yeah, for sure. But, yeah, you know what I mean. Like, because I feel bad. Like, I feel bad because there are people that I know that are my friends and stuff that are, you know, they have fucking family members that are like lifelong cops. So they have full family, you know. I can see it. It's just like one of those weird theological like battles in my head where it's like, you know, I know it's wrong to like say fuck a whole group of people, but, you know, so it's like, sorry about the rant. It's just,
no,
like,
that's okay. That's okay. But it does lead me to a question of, I don't know, maybe I don't, what led you to, you were saying you were stealing stuff around, like you were 7 and 8 already. What did you have? Economic situations that were that? Was it like a risk thing you wanted to do?
I mean, I grew up with I grew up with my grandparents. My mom went to prison. And then when she got out of prison, when I was about 8 or 9, they sent me back to live with her. And then, you know, it was just like, you know, the 80s and drugs and shit like that. So we were just kind of like, you know, bouncing house to house and homeless and fucking like poor. And like, you know, it wasn't, I don't think that I was stealing, because my mom always did a good job of like, you know, she would go to like labor ready and shit if she didn't have a job, and just like work a day and like get money for, you know, hotels, shit like that. But like when I started getting into trouble with the law, it was like a mixture of things of that. But I don't think that I was stealing from necessity as much as I was like stealing from like the product of being like a latchkey kid, like no supervision. You know, I started skateboarding, so all my friends were older. You know, a lot of them would let me stay on the couches at their fucking places. They're like 18, 19, stuff like that. I mean, it's probably, you know, it's probably fucking doesn't take Freud to see that, like, I've got some bitterness. And, you know, the police took like my family unit away.
Yeah. Yeah.
Put them in prison and shit. So, you know, there's that. But yeah, I used to break into the Morgan Hill Inn some mornings and shit, because I don't think I was going to school then. I was like 9, 10, 11 maybe. And I used to fucking go there in the morning time because they had the free continental breakfast. So I'd sneak in the back like exit. I'd wait for someone to leave and I'd go in there and like try to I'd put on like a collared shirt and shit. Like I was a fucking Monopoly guy.
Do you think this, Sammy, this, I don't know, this might be putting more on it, but I feel like in the way you talk about it, that something in stealing, not only economically you might have needed sometimes, but it seems like there was a freedom that you might have been feeling, or like at least for a moment releases some of the weight of the world on you or something.
It's like, I think that's why, I mean, I don't know. I've never had like, in like my 20s and shit, I was like a heavy drinker and like probably fucking was a full blown alcoholic at one point. But as far as like drugs and shit like that, like I'm a drug tourist. I can, you know, I've done heroin before. I've fucking smoked crack before. I've, you know, acid, mushrooms. I've done it, but I don't have that switch in my brain that makes me want to do the same thing over and over, except for like weed and like a good cocktail or something, you know?
So you don't have like natural addiction to that, that you
know, but I mean, you know, I'm still, you know, my whole fucking criminal record is based around vandalism and like graffiti, and you know, and there's, you know, it's a habitual problem throughout my life. And I think that's been like my release, like shoplifting shit and doing, it's not as much like some people do graffiti for fame or to get their name up a bunch and be recognized and shit. I do it more just to like have this feeling of like getting over on like the system, I guess,
you know.
It's like I like fucking crawling buildings with my fucking homies and like ducking behind bushes when the cops come and like throwing a fucking dick on the side of a courthouse. I don't know, you know, it's dumb shit, juvenile shit, but it makes you feel alive and it's fucking.
Yeah, I know. I think that's what I was getting at, that there's something about it that makes you feel alive. I don't know, that you're outside of a system or outside of even yourself for a moment.
And I do not do those illegal activities anymore, ever. It's just not, you know, just so we're clear about that. And everything that I've said is allegedly.
Yeah, we haven't. Yeah,
no dicks have been written on courthouses by me. That was a fucking. Now I'm gonna get like some call from like Savannah, Georgia, and be like, "We had a dick on our."
Yeah, you're responsible for all dicks.
Yeah, all dicks are gonna be me now.
They're gonna like look at when you were touring and when it showed up and trying to make all these correlations. Mm-hmm. I'm trying to think of. I don't want to call it art being catharsis, but because I know enough to know that there's intentionality as to, you know, you know, your art is a product and you have to make it the best that you can make it. But there is some part of it that I imagine for you, Sam, that allows you to channel that anger or that stuff into something productive instead of.
Oh yeah. I mean,
destroying fucking shit up.
Yeah, well, for sure. Because I mean, the thing about the whole fucking shit up business is that after about fucking 25 years old, it becomes very uncute to the court system. And at 40 years old with like fucking face tattoos and shit, like, like there's no like, you know, using the fucking old bedroom eyes to get you out of that one. I'm just a kid. I was drunk. It's like, sir, you have a fucking 22 page rap sheet for doing this. Like, you know, there was a famous graffiti artist, Twist, from San Francisco, and they kicked his ass out of California. he got popped one last time. Oh, you're fucking done. Like, can't even come to Cali no more. Yeah. And then, you know, he became famous. And when he did return, it was at the SF MoMA.
That's that little thing. I wrote a song about like being an asshole, and does it forward your art and excuse it? And then if you don't become famous, does it just make you an asshole?
Yeah, I mean, yeah, it's like the fucking the Modest Mouse reference. They have that song where it's like, Bukowski is a pretty good read, but God, who'd want to be such an asshole? No, it's true, because it's weird, man, because there's that weird thing too, and it's only in punk rock. Maybe some metal motherfuckers do it. Only in punk rock, there's one dude per scene, or girl, or they, one human being in the scene that thinks that they're G.G. Allin. And fascinated with why, because there's no other fucking figure that motherfuckers like try to mimic. Nobody's like, there's not like one John Lennon in every scene. You know, there's not like a Dog the Bounty Hunter in every scene. There's like, you know, it's like the one person that thinks that they're G.G. Allin that has to like just fucking like puke on someone's floor, or like just get wasted and break shit for like attention. I mean, for sure it's attention grabbing.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? But it's like, but you're just being a fucking asshole. Like that person has never made the party tighter, or like, you know, nobody ever got fucking laid because their fucking homie GG fucking number two came fucking running through with his fucking limp shrimp out bleeding. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah. I know exactly what you mean. I don't want to get into GG that much, but for years and years and years, when he was around, even after he died, I made an effort not to speak about him, because, you know, even speaking about someone promotes someone, you know,
but
I did learn a little bit of respect. My friend, Chris Barrows, who's in the Pink Lincolns, was friends with him and kind of made me understand the artistic pursuit of G.G. Allin of like changing the aura of a room. But you're right, though, there's no reason to repeat it again. Like,
you can change the aura of the room with fucking lights, dude. You know what I mean?
not your own shit on the wall.
Yeah, you don't have to fucking stuff a banana up your ass and like feed it to a fucking paying customer, you dick. Like, I don't know. That, you know,
amazing. In like 88, there was a band called Beautiful Bert, who was like a 600-pound albino with frizzy white hair. Yeah, and I was a sound guy, and I ran this venue at Dirty Nelly's, and he got on stage, and the music was not even memorable, but he took the mic and shoved it up his ass.
Oh, see?
And after the, I was really polite. Afterwards, I said, you can keep that mic.
yeah, it's like, yeah. Man, one of the first shows I ever went to was like L7 with Nirvana at the Cow Palace in SF, and the chick from L7, it was like, I think she'd done it a few times, but, or maybe it was the time that she did it, and it was the famous one, but I was like fucking 4 feet from the person that got hit in the head with a fucking used tampon. And I was like, yo, that's fucking crazy, dude. That's some, you know, that was some TV shit too. Cause I would be irate, sir. Yeah, yeah. I would write a
strongly worded letter.
Strongly worded letter to the head of their fan club.
With red lines.
Yep, dude. It would be a PowerPoint presentation.
But I guess punk always leads to that sometimes, and maybe it has to go there sometimes, because there's just, people are looking for something unique or different, or like, I don't know, punk is this weird combination of wanting to fit in but be fucked up at the same time. It always seems like you have to like stretch or be on some kind of edge the whole time, and that's like a difficult place to live or stay.
It's a very difficult place to stay, and it's like you know, it's the same with like, you see, you know, reformed straight edgers, if that's the thing. It's like X's on their hand, and they used to go to fucking, you know, bars and beat up drunk people and fucking just be all about this life, and then they had a couple kids, and, you know, fucking a glass of wine ain't that bad, player. And then, you know, and they're out, because I respect straight edge fuckers to the fullest, because it's definitely a commitment and paying homage to an ideal, which I think that punk rock inherently is. Before, back in the day, I'm sure it was more of like out of boredom, and they did this. It's like, people aren't I mean, there's no way to be bored now.
Well, I mean, also those type of movements sometimes become slogans in themselves or judgments of others, which I have problems with. But the idea of someone pursuing a life of no alcohol is, to me, is admirable. But
yeah, for sure.
But when it turns into like a political statement, it gets a little easier.
You know, and that's the thing. Like if you're a politician, like, you know, fucking kudos. You know, anything to an extreme, I guess. Yeah, for me, at least, is just it's just too much fucking commitment and responsibility. Which I have two ex-wives that'll agree with that statement. You know, so. When scenes, not just like punk rock, but when any scene becomes homogenized and, you know, ready for the masses, does it necessarily mean that it's dead? No, because there's always going to be the underground of every scene, you know, keep shit fucking progressing. And should fucking the quote unquote masses be fucking judged just because they're, you know, coming around and listening to some fucking shit just because we had it and ingested it down in the fucking on the ground level doesn't mean that that art shouldn't reach the masses to maybe even change some shit because those are the people running it. And it shouldn't be this thing of like, I don't know, man, because it's a double-edged sword because it's like gentrification pushes people out that can't fucking afford to live there anymore. But a lot of the times it was crime ridden fucking neighborhoods. That's why it was cheap to get in there. And now there is a fucking vegan coffee shop. So you can actually eat some shit that isn't just fucking sugar and like, you know, and so, but it's fucking lame to force shit out. It's the same way it's lame to say fucking, oh, this shit's gone mainstream just because one song catches, you know, maybe that song makes some fucking dude doing some dumb corporate shitty things to somebody makes him think, and then he doesn't do it.
Johnny's got a problem and he's out of control.
And welcome to the middle of the interview, where now we get to present to you our one and only advertiser. And this is Siren Records in McHenry, Illinois. I really love this place. My friend, the Linquists that run the record store, are a pretty great married couple. They're very passionate about their record store. It's a great place to visit. It's very homey, and they have a great selection of contemporary and classic music and rock and metal and a bunch of different passion projects. They're really into the Lillingtons and Teenage Bottle Rockets, so a lot of interesting posters and records from that gang. They also deal with cassettes, and they will buy old records and cassettes from you. And if you go into the back room, you see that they have an amazing selection of old and new stereos, record players, amplifiers, speakers. It's a pretty fascinating place, and they do a lot of repairs on things like that too. Got a staff that works there in this little cubby hole with all these amazing tools. Anyway, you can visit their website at www.sirenrecordsmchenry.com. You have to put the McHenry in there, McHenry. So once again, that's SirenRecordsMchenry.com.
And now back to Sammy and Jughead.
Johnny's got a problem and he's out of control. Johnny's got a problem and he's out of control.
Yeah, I think, Sam, you're talking to something that I feel about myself, that there's a certain point where some intellects are so good at understanding other motives that it almost makes you, I don't know, but like stuck in a gray area.
It is. I'm always interested too to think that, you know, we're fortunate enough to be in, like, you know, be in bands and playing music, and this is our reality.
Yeah.
But if that same theory that we're having about like getting stuck in this gray area is the same way that like a quote unquote square person feels like when they get to a point in their career, you know what I mean? Like they fucking have, you know, do they go through these same turmoils? Like they've been working next to this dude in a cubicle for fucking 10 years. And now if they shit on that person, they can get a raise.
Yeah.
But like they need the raise for their fucking kid. Like,
right.
You know, I'm sure it's in every aspect of life. It's the exact same dilemma, just kind of like framed a little different.
I'm going to throw something at you that might be weird, but I think about it often. I was never a philosophy student, but I still read philosophy to this day. And I read Kierkegaard. And one of the things that hit me, even though he was writing through like Christian existentialism, he has this thing about belief and that how everything eventually just breaks down, all logic breaks down. And some people that leads to God. But what he was talking about is that it has that leap of faith sort of idea, which is usurped by Christianity and religion. But in reality, I think is an actual thing that someone who, like you're saying, like I'm talking about, who's lives in the gray and can understand other people's reasonings, in order to actually be active, you have to make that believe in what you think for a moment, at least to make a choice.
Exactly. And and I think that not like even I don't know what I am. Like I've done enough hallucinogenics, like a lot, to know that like there's some kind of energy field, something out there fucking around. Okay? 'Cause it's like it's come in and out of different fucking things. And so all this shit didn't just get here. You know what I mean? But when we start thinking about it as far as like faith or what it is, you always, like how you say, like after a long enough timeline, everything will just like chaotically fall apart with reason. 'Cause you're just like, you know, what do you mean you got to do that before you die?
It's like answering a kid's why question. You can answer why until the end of time, you know?
Forever. It's like, I got to get this done before I die one day. It's like, but why? You're going to be dead, dummy. Oh, but it's going to fucking, it's like, you're not going to be in a coffin, like fucking bored. It's going to be like it was before you were born, jackass. Like, it's just meh. But like people get freaked out and they start thinking about, okay, well, like, okay, Big Bang made this, but what made the Big Bang? What? And you get to this thing of what we call infinity, which I like to call is the same way my dog can't do pre-algebra. You know what I mean? Our brains aren't supposed to fucking comprehend that. That's like, we're biological things that are put here with a fucking the same purpose, is that when my dog, they're not a fly around, bro. But when my dog takes a shit in downtown LA, a fucking swarm comes and just eats it. You know what I mean? That fly fucking, it just needs to know what it needs to know to eat the shit. And that's all we are. You know, we just have ego and like this weird system that isn't developed yet. That's making us think that there's got to be more. This can't, I mean, it's the same fucking mentality of like, you got a 3-bedroom house, but now you need a 4-bedroom house.
Like, no, well, I think we somewhere along evolution, we became these beings that could recognize the past and the present and ourself within that time. And then that's where the problem started.
But I mean, and that's where like hallucinogenics come in for me.
I think it releases some of that.
Well, I think, well, no, I'm just like thinking on the way of like philosophizing on shit, I guess would be what I would do. It's like the way that I can fuck with theories in my head. Like you do DMT, you can go a little deeper in these thought things, like deconstruct your own mind to help you figure things out, you know? And I just keep coming back to the same fucking thing of just like, it's hard not to have a nihilistic approach on everything, because it's just, maybe I'm getting to that point that you were talking about where me thinking about it is like getting to the place where it's starting to get chaotic.
Yeah.
And like a year from now, you're going to talk to me. And I'm going to have like found Jesus, you know?
Well, it's not a surprise to me that a lot of musicians often do get to that point in their life where they find religion or something. And I grew up, my mother was always searching for religion. So I had got a taste of a lot of different ones. So I don't have any prescription to any one, but I do believe there is that thing of, that Kierkegaard was right. There's something about humans that when it breaks apart, you need some sort of belief to.
Well, yeah. It's like forward. I said earlier about like, you know, if God, I mean, not God, but just organized religion in general wasn't prevalent in fucking modern society, it would be fucking crazy.
Yeah, I have that thought, but I also have the thought, like, I don't know, Sam Harris and a lot of other atheists talk about this, is that what they're missing, a lot of those, is the focus that religion puts on afterlife, whereas the focus, if you don't have that, is life. It just becomes way more magnified of the importance. And, you know, people, a lot of religious people think, oh, if you don't have that God, meaning falls apart, whereas a lot of atheists are like, no, that's where meaning begins, you know?
Well, and
everything you do is important because it affects everybody, and you only have that one time to do it.
And the thing that I've noticed too about like when you really start breaking down or getting broken down by like mushrooms or DMT or even like MDMA or shit like that, it always comes back to ego. For me, at least, is like what it breaks down. And it's the same thing of people, maybe whatever it is in our brain that needs us to fucking surrender to something more because we have a weird guilt of a fucking ego, but then it inverts it on itself because then you're just only thinking about yourself anyway. You know, it's like funerals. People get hella bummed out about missing a funeral. The funeral is not for the fucking dead person.
The dead person doesn't even know you're not there.
The fucking funeral, so you can be seen grieving by right. fucking your peers, and fucking everybody can look at everybody and go, okay, you're a good person because you fucking made it out here, bro. Like, fuck a fucking funeral. Didn't miss me with that shit. I can have the own funeral in my head with like, I mean, I've just been to too many funerals where it's just like a social event and it's fucking lame.
Yeah.
You know,
well, Sam, I'm going to turn this around and talk a little bit about music. We've already been going an hour and wow.
I bet.
No, that's me. I'm very good at derailing things. But that actually, I believe that in, if you want to get to the heart of punk, you don't really talk about just punk and the you talk about, you know, the person's mind, you know, like what makes it, what's behind
it. What makes it? That, there it is.
Yeah. And on that, I just forgot what I was going to say, but let me go to the, oh yeah, I know it. I was going to tie it to the ego. What, like I was reviewing the band and obviously you are made the, I don't know if you would consider yourself the band. I mean, that's definitely not true because the dynamics of a band make a band, but talking about ego, you are the focus of like the interviews and stuff. Is that, what's the reason for that? Like, is there something in you that doesn't want to disappear within a group or are you driven more than anybody else or what?
No, I just have
the charisma.
Yeah. This is the truth of it is that at the beginning we let some of the other dudes, drummers are special people. Okay. Drummers are special people. And I actually just did a podcast with Scotty, our drummer, up in Napa for Rules of the Pit, which actually went really well. But
yeah.
In the beginning days, it was just like everyone was drinking a lot. And there was just a couple really bad like interviews where it was fucking just like cringeworthy, where we're just like, okay, dude, we need to get this. So it just turns out that I happen to fucking be the singer, but I have the most fucking free time. I'm willing to do this more where the other guys have like the kids in the room and shit like that. So it's like, I would love it if everybody did fucking interviews. It would be tight, but the fact of the matter is this is like our third interview in a year. So it's not like a big deal.
Yeah. Yeah.
Have to take time out of it and do stuff, but
that's why I think also that the idea of whether you think about it or not as an artist, the idea of building a persona happens over time because, I mean, you may start as just another person in the band, but then everyone takes on their responsibilities. And then all of a sudden you become the center of the focus of what people see on stage. And then you're like, oh, now I have to be the one who does the interviews because that's part of my job. So it becomes like this own persona almost beyond your own. Like self, yeah. Or what you believe you to be within a band or something.
Yeah, it's not really like a, for us, it's not a persona. This is how we've always done it. We've always been big believers in, like, for instance, I don't have publishing type shit where I'm getting, you know, more points than anyone else in the band everything. Kyle just joined our band from Sad Boy Sinister and Whiskey Avengers, the guitar player, and he's the fifth to get dead. You know, there's five of us. So when we get paid, we fucking take out the calculator, divide it by five, and that stops the ego thing and the persona thing and who's getting more, you know.
Yeah. Pressure.
I mean, when we have podcast interviews and shit to do like this, like it's just gone default at this point that I'm just like the main person that does them. If I can't do them, they can always do it. But like, I'll always ask and shit when we get offered, I'll still be like, hey, I got to do this podcast. You guys good? You know, just have a mutual respect for it. But it's,
yeah, that's a belief.
That's a
belief I always have. With Weasel, we had a conflict eventually. Well, you know, I was working with Ben for 20 years, so there's lots of conflicts. But there's a point where my belief was whoever was in the band on a certain record, you divide that by how many people, and that's what your percentage would be.
Yeah.
But then he wanted to start taking a little bit more. And that threw me in this weird dynamic position where I was like, well, then, but I still want the percentage of the amount of people are in the band since I've been here from the beginning. And then it got all this conflict.
Then you have to start getting into fucking algebraic equations for real about like, well, no, I was here from fucking January to fucking December, but I also played on this fucking album. And then you split. And then
it gets all crazy.
Like, and it's like, yo, fuck all that shit. There's five people in the band. Fucking cut that shit in five, but that comes with a responsibility of shit too. You could easily get a fucking ego about shit and be like, yo, fuck this. I'm taking the brunt of things. If something happens that have like some shit has gone down in the past and like get dead lore. Nothing's ever happened at a show except for once we fought some bouncers at the fucking Parkside. And like the
fucking, was that the one where Fat Mike heard about? Is that the one that
yeah. And so, and I won't get into it because it's like it's the wife of somebody in the scene, and it was an unfortunate event. We didn't start the fucking fight, or at least I didn't. I'd gotten off the stage and sat down on a fucking picnic table, and this fight came out of the Parkside into the back, and the bouncers were hitting fucking people that were there to pay a show, and so I just reacted, and I sort of I fucked up some bouncers with a fucking bar stool. And that they tried to like, you know, fucking blackball us and get us through all the through all that shit. What were we just saying? What was going on, fucking
man? You lost me there. we were talking about.
Oh, I'm sorry.
We were talking about the split.
Taking the brunt. other than that, we've never like caused any mischief or anything at any show, like with like staff or anything. It's always been a story from like off site down at the bar or down the street or something like that. But it's like 90% of the time I don't go to the bar down the street because I'm fucking tired after we play. I go into the van and I pass out and watch Netflix or, you know, but some crazy shit will go down and it's not Get Dead did this. It's fucking Sam from Get Dead did this. That's that's what it always is. It's not like, it's never structured as like the band did this or the drummer did this. Mm-hmm. It's always like, because you're the front person, you have to take a brunt. And there's other artists out there that have like take that into consideration and want to be like compensated for shit like that. But you, I don't know, like don't be in this fucking racket if you think that you need to be compensated for every little fucking thing that comes out of your mouth. Mm-hmm. You know?
Well, I think that ego that you're talking about often drives those type of people to forget the dynamics of a band. And then, you know, I mean, and you can pull it off. Like Peter Gabriel is one of my favorite musicians of all time. He started with Genesis and he, you know, went off and did his own thing. And I don't blame that, but there is something, but he still has respect for the dynamic of musicians that he works with. You know, there is something that even if you're your own driving force, you need those other people to, I don't know, give it, I don't know, something untangible.
And there's a flip side to that too. You get shit like fucking like Paramore situations. You know what I mean? Where it's like one person that's just like such a force in their own head that anybody that tries to come in or even the people that started it with you are just fucking that your head just pushes them out of the room.
Well, that's why we went through, I think, like 17 musicians in Screeching Weasel besides me and Ben.
Like Kyle's are that guitar spot that we have, you know, sort of with Moki and JP and then Travis. And then we've had like fucking 7 foot. It's like a Spinal Tap. It's just that, that one spot, man. It's just like, I don't know what it is. It's like the fucking, the way the music reverberates over that side of the room, just fucking, they just crack. Wow, lose it, man.
We got to wrap this up soon already. This has been great, Sam. I didn't know, I go into a lot of these not knowing what to expect, and I always want to make something genuine or special. And I was worried about this one because I didn't know you learned about them this week, but this went so fast.
This was fucking, this is a pleasure, man. I appreciate the opportunity too. Like I said, we're doing the podcast with Fat Mike, and like we just fucking Danny Wade just like walked into the studio the other day.
Yeah.
It was like, yo, go time. Like, it's like a childhood fucking idol, dude. I'm like, So, and after that podcast, I was like, so, are there like production meetings or like, is there a schedule? And they're like, yeah. There's a schedule. I'm like, can I like get a link or something? Like,
keep you in the dark. Keep you in the dark. So that's how they control you. They keep you in the dark, Sam.
Yeah. Fucking put you like a mushroom. Did you shit in the dark?
Yeah. Well, one thing I want to hit before I let you go, and this it started is, you know, every time I look at stuff and study someone, I want to find something that seems like a joke, but maybe actually leads to some real stuff. But I did notice over time that your tear has grown, and I was wondering if you were documenting a tear falling down your face.
Yeah, there's
and that's like a, but instead of funny, but yet it seems like there's a reason.
So the upside down cross on my eye is from my friend, Baby Drew, who's not with us anymore. He shot himself. It was right on the block down the street from my house. And we called him Baby Drew. He started working at the tattoo shop when he was 17 or 16 or something. He was the straight edge boxer kid. And anyway, we called him Baby Drew. He went through some shit, but he had fucking teardrops down his face for Baby Drew and all the in his jail time and since some shootings and stuff. And he killed himself, and I had gotten one teardrop for that. And then we had another one of our friends shortly after that. Wes, he was fucking did some bad coke and got the fentanyl shit. And so he clipped himself too. And I was in where we're at the Dynamo in fucking Switzerland. And we were staying there in the loft up on top. And we met a tattoo artist from fucking the United States that was living out there and shit, who we had almost gotten in. We did get into a fucking full 5-on-5 fight with a bunch of break dancers in this guy a year before, because there was a dance studio built into the music venue. Have you guys been to the Dynamo?
No,
it's built on the built on the fucking water, whatever. But the year before, we had gotten into a fight because that fucking tattoo artist ran his mouth to some break dancers. He didn't realize that break dancers are fucking little muscles that'll fuck you up.
Lower to the ground and almost.
Luckily I had my ace in the hole. My friend fucking Nate, Alaska Nate, who was a boat captain. He just happened to be in port and came out for the night. Fucking with some roadhouse shit. But fucking, so the second one, that guy gave me a stick and poke tattoo of that. And then when I got home, cause I had Drew's ashes with me that time, cause he liked going up mountains and hiking and shit. So I had to go on a hike and spread his ashes. I was like, you motherfucker. Yeah, but I got his ashes put into this design that he did on my neck. And then the same with fucking Wes on this. So I've been thinking actually of getting my face tattoos. These ones taken off just because it's weird living. I've had them so long and I've already got my friends memorialized in there. Mm-hmm. And just the fucking questions are just so draining. People out there, if you're thinking about getting tattoos, just fucking, get them on your face if you want. But after a while, it doesn't bug you for the first 10 years, but after 15, going to see your fucking nephews, pick them up at school. And I had a fucking lady once, I was painting her house, and she hit up my boss and was like, don't teardrops mean he was a pedophile in prison. It's just fucking, not only is that wildly wrong, but it's how many other people, I'd never even heard that, but how many, you're dealing with fuckers in the suburbs that just watch Lifetime movies. You know what I mean? I'm the bad guy in the movie for sure. You know what I'm saying? I'm smoking cigarettes out in your cul-de-sac or I've been thinking about getting them fucking just lasered off, just cause it's also, you're living life like this. People are always diverting their eyes from you. So you get this weird thing that the whole world just has a tick. It's bizarre.
I don't usually go into talking about tattoos with people, but I just wanted that one just seemed to relate to the pain that's in music and that you don't seem to avoid in your writing. And then the way you approach actually singing seems very guttural.
Yeah.
So it seemed to relate to your outward expression too.
yeah. Well, it's also, I've got obviously I've got fucking impulse control problems and stuff. You know what I mean? Just from being a fucking rowdy kid. So
do you think being in a band has helped you to control something? Or like I said,
100%. If I wasn't before I was taking music super seriously, I was skateboarding super seriously. I was writing for a shop up in Santa Rosa, skating in the Warped Tour. I won contests and fucking, and then I started, I started girls and alcohol pretty much slows down skateboarding for everybody. And then you get a job because you got to pick the girl up in a car, but you got to pay for gas. The next thing you know, you're fucking 35 and you got bills and you're what the fuck happened? it happens quick, man. But I don't know, man. I could go on and on.
That reminded me. Then I'll let you go. That reminded me of, I told a story to a friend the other day in high school. I loved this girl. She was just her name is Joy, and she was before that she was like, you know, only woman without hair you knew back then was in Star Trek. There was that woman who shaved her head in the episode.
Yeah.
And she was, so, and Sinead O'Connor.
Sinead O'Connor. Yeah.
So I was in love with this girl. And my friend, she actually liked my friend instead. And I pursued her for a year. And then I finally said to him, I go, I know you're being my friend and you're not dating her, but what's going on? Why doesn't she like me? You know?
Yeah.
And he's like, well, she told me she can't date you because you don't have a car or a VCR.
I mean, that's the thing, man. It's like you think that like it all came back. I had a friend once on mushrooms that was just convinced that everything revolved around like the human being getting laid. He's like, what? Why do you wake up in the morning, bro? He's all, because you got to take a shower early, bro. You got to drive there. You got to pay for the gas to drive there. You got to go get the you got to go to your job, and you got to go get a haircut, and you got to get deodorant, and you got to get food so you don't look fucking skinny, bro. And you got to fucking do this. And he's all, and why? So you can fuck, you know what I mean? And he's like, fuck. I mean, it's pretty crazy logic, but you know, it makes sense, dude. It's super fun to think about shit like that.
Well,
rad time, man, and I appreciate you having me on here.
Yeah, no, it was great. So thanks.
It'd be rad if you're ever in if you're ever out of that fucking frozen tundra and you're out in LA.
Yeah,
no. I can look me up. And
yeah, that's right. You're in LA now, no longer in the San Fran area.
I mean, I'm gonna try. I own my house up in San Jose, so I'm trying to sell that right now.
Yeah.
I mean, there's no reason. All my friends are up there. My mom was there, but like, I'm working down here now, and every time I go back up there, it's like, not for like constructive.
Yeah.
Constructive gotcha. Things. You
I
know
gotcha.
What I mean?
Yeah, so I know what you mean.
I need to fucking like just be focused, but keep an eye out for it. It's Fat Mike.
Yeah. I've already seen promotion about it on Instagram and stuff. So, all right, Sam, thanks for doing this with me.
And, absolutely, man.
Yeah, have a good day. Bye-bye.
Yeah, you too, brother. Right.
Bye-bye.
Cheers. With a nickel-plated tooth in a briefcase, hold my breath when the policeman drive by. Bye-bye, I've been told not to show this face around here anymore. With a criminal, I keep her back under the bed for the dent. I steal her away. Her mama called me a devil, her daddy called me a thief, her sister called me trouble, her brother called the police. Well, I guess you'll just have to kill me. But after that, I'll be back to be with my baby again. This world ain't strong enough to pull us apart. I got enough bullets to hold some of them all. It ain't a life with all the hate and all the love, and there's a wrong without the right.
If you have made it this far and have successfully released yourself from your undercover job as an inpatient at an insane asylum in 1887, then you have just got done listening to Get Dead song Nickel Plated, released by Fat Records in 2020 on their record Dancing with the Curse. Thanks, everybody. I hope you enjoyed that and continue enjoying podcasts and listening the more the podcast goes up in its ranking and the more accessible it becomes for me to get guests that you want. Help out however you can. I've not mentioned yet, but you can also go to the www.jugheadsbasementpodcast.com website, and there's also a button there for donations, which you can go to PayPal, and it'll ask you to put the amount that you would like to donate to Jughead's Basement. Or if you have a PayPal account, you could just go straight to PayPal and just donate directly to me at jugheadsbasement@gmail.com. But once again, money is just a small part of this. I would like to continue doing this, and you can help out in many ways by advertising the podcast, by sharing it with friends or on medias. Or you can go back in time to 1887 and invent podcasts and re-release my podcasts before I release them. So pre-re-released my podcast. And then by now, I will be super famous and probably out of my mind. Well, that's already happened. Anyway, thanks everybody. Goodbye.